And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 841. We're recapping an NFBC main event draft, his draft. We're talking some ADP risers and fallers in the main event just from 5 days apart, essentially, or not even. We're going to get to that. And much, much more, talking all things as NFBC drafts as we are heading to the big last draft weekend of the fantasy baseball season. In order to help me break this down, talking his draft and much, much more, is my co-host. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_TBenTid. How are we doing, my friend?
Doing good, Bubba. Yeah, one main event down, two to go, and pretty happy with how it went. It was a great weekend. Spent it in New Jersey at the MTM Estates, for part of it at least. We were at the hotel to draft and hang out. But yeah, it was a great weekend, and now I have another draft, and so we're recording Monday the 16th. I have a draft in 3 days, so time to put that one behind me and get focused on the next one.
Yep. It was good to see it live, or not live. When you finished, you showed us the board, and in that time, it was good. Things have settled in. Before we talk draft, so let's just cat out of the bag on this one. How was the free parking? How was the estate? How was the? I finally got to meet MTM in person last year. Mike the Mouth, the Godfather in Vegas. One of the nicest human beings you'll meet. He's got his persona online, which is great. But the guy's great. Whenever I've had issues, he like DMs me. And make, like my daughter was so he's a great human being, and so that's why it's funny when you meet the guy. It's the old behind the mask thing. How was it going? Because I can only imagine the way he treats us for 3 hours at the VIP party in Vegas. He lets you into his house, so I can only imagine like the warm reception he was rolling around with. Not to mention probably the tour he gave as well.
Oh yeah, I got the tour last year when I was there for the first time, but it's great. I did have the free parking. I did drive to his house, so I took advantage of that fully, which is always good. And so it started out. They had breakfast for the 10 a.m. main event. I got there around lunchtime, so it took advantage of some Jersey Mike subs, which were very fitting. Mike the Mouth had to buy Jersey subs, so that was good. And they had pizza for the ultimate, but I knew I had to hold off on the pizza because Mike not only had food catered at his house afterwards, but he had wait staff there. So he had a bartender at his home bar. There was a woman upstairs manning the kitchen, bringing out food for us. It was unbelievable. Like it was a lot. Excuse me. Last year, it was a lot last year, and then he took it up a notch with the wait staff this year. And even his wife was there this time. So I didn't see his wife last year, but she was very nice. Got to meet Mike's dog, I think. So they were very like, I can't imagine having. So at least Mike knows most of us, but his wife doesn't know any of us, I don't think. So imagine
you're
having like 40 random
friends he talks to online.
Yeah, right. 40 random dudes just strolling into your house. That's beautiful as it is. But yeah, it was a good time. The food was great, and yeah, it's as long as Mike's gonna, or as long as the NFBC has this event, and then even if we don't go to Mike's every year, but I'm sure he's gonna want us there every year. I'm gonna keep going. So it's a great time.
Yeah, no, like that's how the one in Vegas. Not everybody knows how it goes. Last year, Ryan, like our first year, like sure we'll go. It's like you pay a certain amount. They reserve a suite at the hotel, fully catered bar. There's snacks. There's whatever. There's food. They do the midnight draft there, which is always fun to watch. As guys have been drafting all day and main events in the morning. And the Mouth is in charge of it, and he puts on a heck of a show. So I'm looking forward to this year. I think we have a swimming pool in our suite this year at the Rio, which I'm hoping has it blocked off because that seems like a bad idea. But it'll be entertaining. We'll see. We'll see how that – maybe Waxman ends up in the pool. We'll see. But, yeah.
The other thing I left out real quick was I also drafted next to Mike in the main event. So
How'd that go? That is a great point. We joked about it when your KDS came out. I don't think we actually discussed this since then.
No, Mike's actually pretty quiet when he drafts, but we did have some back and forth with picks and whether we were making them or other people around the room were making them. So it was good, actually. I don't know if he copied off me at all, but we'll have to. I didn't catch any copying from Mike, but I can't say for sure.
Yeah, would have been smart if he did, as you've had quite the success in the main event in recent years. So let's talk about draft one of three main event drafts. Obviously, Ben has had other drafts he has taken part in, DCs, listener leagues, whatnot. What else do you have besides the two main events? Or is that it? You're done after these last two?
My home league's drafting Tuesday.
Okay, so That's going to be great trying to throw that in between two main events, different formats. That'll be, you know.
Well, no, not this Tuesday. It's next Tuesday. So
after your main events are done.
I make sure to schedule the draft that I'm in charge of after I'm done with the NFC. Okay, so
smart. That seems like just a brain mush right there, trying to switch back and forth between those.
A 12-team head-to-head with like OP on base percentage and slugging. Yeah, it's like completely different.
Different roadmap, folks. Much different. There's not to mention Yahoo, ADP, and all the goods there. So let's talk about it. We're going to look at boards and kind of get an overall thought, or we'll look at your team first. We'll look at the board. And then we're going to talk, Ben, as people, we did a podcast on this like a month ago, give or take. Ben also wrote a great article for our Patreon talking about building a draft roadmap through the NFP, through the ADP. Ben shared his map with me. We will talk about that as well. And the fact how he hit on so many of the ones he was targeting, which is remarkable for anybody that's done a draft. But Ben, you had pick 12 in this draft, and you go into these drafts with an idea, a game plan. I guess we could use the roadmap as we talk about the team when all things are said and done. So your first pick was J-Rod, the target there, because I know we've talked before, and in the end, you didn't really go pitching heavy. I feel like you made up for it, but you got two big hitters early with J-Rod and Vladito. Is that kind of the game plan going into this?
It was. I did have an option for a pitcher if one fell to me, but I was planning on going hitter to start, and J-Rod was my actual target in the first round, just based on how ADP was looking and my preferences. I think I only had one J-Rod before this draft, so now I'm on two teams, and of course he got hit in the hand in the
How did you feel when you saw that last night?
My heart, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I could see broken wrist out for a month or like month and a half. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. But yeah, I think I dodged a bullet for now, knock on wood.
Real quick, so I'm gonna go back and forth from your roadmap and your pick. So for those who remember, Ben has his he maps it out by round, by pick. Only goes so many rounds because eventually it's just reserves and you're just filling in blanks at that point. But he has like his targets and he has his safe picks, his max picks, his fallbacks, his men picks. So he can kind of do this and that. But he usually has like a position or even a stat that he's looking for. And just to kind of keep his brain in line is the way I look at it. If I'm wrong, fill me in on anything, Ben. But on this first pick, like you mentioned, J-Rod was your target. But you put outfielder shortstop. Now, the reason I'm asking you this is because your next pick was a first baseman. So, and you basically had an outfield shortstop target round one, no shortstop through round two. Can you elaborate on that just for people that maybe do build roadmaps?
Yeah, so I put shortstop because my other target at this point was going to be Gunnar Henderson. And he ended up going actually three picks before it got to me. So that kind of wiped it away. But if this had been pre-spring training, I would have been looking at Lindor at the same point in the draft. But I already have Lindor on like two teams, and I didn't want to add that the power risk being sapped to a main event when I already had him on two teams. There's other options in this range that I like hitter-wise. And so you pointed out that I went with Guerrero Jr., and he ended up being – actually, the guys I was looking at in the second round weren't necessarily the same kind of players. Actually, no, they're what I want to say is they were kind of the same types of players, more power bats, and Vlad was one of them. And the other two that I preferred to Vlad went before me at the turn – picks 14 and 15 coming back around in the second. And that's why I went with Vlad instead, which I'm fine with because great average. And I think Vlad, there's always a chance he goes back into the mid-30s and homers. And he's great for 100 runs, 100 RBIs. So I think pairing him with J-Rod is great because I get plenty of average runs and RBIs, hopefully like 60 homers and then 35 steals maybe. So it's a good foundation to start with.
And obviously, we'll go through the rest of the draft, but your next hitter we'll talk about shortly really helps in that power department to go with that. But the average base, as we've talked about many times, obviously the average pool starts to dwindle. So that's what keeps Vlad, even though the certain years you don't know where he's going to go in the power department, you pretty much write in his batting average, which is elite, which gives him a big boost. Nick Kurtz went two picks after Vladdy. Is it the Nick Kurtz batting average that scares you? The sophomore season that scares you? Scares not the right word. Is it the batting average, the sophomore slump, potential, all those kind of things that got you onto Vlad over the maybe bigger ceiling of Nick Kurtz?
Yeah, well, Vlad's been my first base one all draft season. So that if Vlad was somehow gone by then, maybe I would have to think about that. But as I'm not gonna say who I else had written down, I'm not gonna give away all my secrets. But you see my other option that I could have gone with, and if I didn't get Vlad, and
yeah, it's an option I like as well, so it's okay.
Yeah, and I would have pulled this player up a little bit, but, and I wouldn't have been afraid to do that because I'm kind of at the turn, and you kind of have to do that, especially in a 15 team league. You can't really go off at ADP all the time, but. With Kurtz, yeah, it's probably a combo of the strikeout, highest strikeout rate that he has, and then also the sophomore slump, which may not even happen, but at least with Vlad, I know that what I'm getting.
For sure. And the gentleman that took Nick Kurtz took J-Ram at 10 in the round before, which a 10th pick J-Ram, just I would be salivating if I was sitting in a draft room and saw that. That would I don't think I have a share this entire season, and I've had like 7, 8. And I've never gotten a J-Ram shared, so that's...
And he's fallen a lot in the mains. It's wild. He was going fourth in DCs, and now he's going 9th, 10th.
Yeah, I don't know why, honestly. I guess like it could be the Scooble, the Crochets, the pitching going up still.
Yeah.
Why is he the guy? Like, it just seems so strange, but that is main events, and we will talk more about that. Corbin Carroll, for those that are wondering, went at pick 13, so he's back in round one. Now he's playing baseball. That didn't take long, so if you bought the quick dip is what I'll call it, he's back. Lindor went at the beginning of round three. A couple other highlights before we keep going on your team. So we saw the big three, Scooble, Crochet, Skeens going round one in that order. Different picks, 5, 7, and 11. Christopher Sanchez was the fourth starting pitcher. He went with the third pick in round two. But then Mason Miller was the first closer. He went in the middle of round two. Then it went Diaz, Duran, Cade Smith, Munoz. So Miller went in the middle of round two. Then we had five closers finish out the round, essentially. Six closer. So there's six closers off the board because Devin Williams went round three before your third round pick, Ben, which was David Bednar. So David Bednar, 7th closer off the board. You were targeting a relief pitcher or a closer in this round. So you got your guy.
I did. And there was a great shot that Bednar didn't make it back to me because, like how you mentioned, all the closers got pulled up so early. That second round is kind of where they're all going now, it seems like. And if Bednar had gone, I don't know if I would have taken Chapman. I think I may have written him down as an option. Yeah, I did. But I feel a lot more confident in Bednar's skills maintaining than I do Chapman. So I identified J-Rod in my roadmap and I identified Bednar. So I was 2 for 3 so far. And even though I didn't have Vlad as my target, he was an option for me. So everyone I've drafted was someone I kind of included in my map. So it was a good start in that regard.
Yeah, very good start, and your fallback option is one of my favorite closers to target, so that would go well, and he went 2 picks after you, so it feels like that player, again, I'm going to be nice and respect the system and not name names, but that player was probably targeting the closer in round three also and probably saw the same thing you did and go, oh, crap, like, are they even going to make it to us at this point, which I guess goes to show in the Discord on Sunday, some people were discussing a current main event getting drafted. And I think Mason Miller went like pick 12 and then he double tapped with another closer in round two, which that's a whole other discussion for another day. We don't have to go there. But I mentioned in round four, Ben, that you got some power to add to your mid if Vladdy doesn't get their thing. If not, you have extra power, which is beautiful. Even with Brent Rooker. Brent Rooker is a guy that as draft season's gone along, I think as I've switched my brain to 15s, I've started to be like, okay, I see much more of the appeal. Like Ryan has loved him the entire draft season, like just totally loved him. The more I do 15s, I start to see the appeal of Brent Rooker so much more. So where were you at on this pick?
Yeah, I was hoping to go with a starter at this point in the draft. And I actually left on the board one of the starters I wanted or I had identified in the fourth round. And I don't know if I ever really considered him. I don't remember thinking about taking that other starter. But with Rooker, yeah, he's really underrated because he's not going to hurt you in average. He's good for – projections love him. I remember noticing that when I was looking at those throughout draft season. He's good for 30, 35 homers with a clear upside for more because of the park. He's another probably 85, 90 runs in RBIs. And I think he stole 6 bases or roughly around that last year, Rooker. So he's not going to, kind of like with Vlad, they're power hitters, but they aren't complete zeros in speed. If I get 10 between the two of them, that's very helpful. And
it's huge.
Yeah, so to get another 30 homer bat, so now I have between my three hitters, I can kind of project for 90 homers, hopefully, and an average that was still pretty elite. And then allowed me to take some better buys later in the draft because of that average base, despite not having like three guys who steal, which I kind of worked on steals later anyway too. So I was happy with the power and the average I got.
Yeah, your hitting foundation is beautiful. That's why three of your next four picks, or even four of your next six, or actually five of your next seven will be starting pitchers to get back on track there. So I guess I'll pick your brain here, because like you mentioned it when you're looking at your roadmap for rounds three and four, you were looking at, or you look or rounds three, you're looking at a relief pitcher, starting pitcher. You took Bednar. Rounds four and five, you're looking for a starting pitcher. You didn't take one in round four, even though one was on the board, technically. Like you mentioned, two were gone on of your targets. So in round five, you came back with one, and your main target in round five gone, but you had literally four other options. Like you were leaving with a starting pitcher unless somehow things went haywire. And you went Joe Ryan. So we'll start there before we get into, I'm gonna start grouping guys around a little more. So Joe Ryan's your ace. What were your thoughts there? Because again, like I said, it wasn't your first target. He went earlier in the round, but you got Joe Ryan out of the five options you had on your map.
Right. Once Framber Valdez, who was, I guess, the fourth one who went before it came back to me in the fifth, went two picks before me. I was just hoping that the team 11 didn't go with Ryan, because I think he was kind of like the bottom of a tier of that fringe SP1, SP2 tier. So it was an easy draft once Ryan didn't go before me. And not, he's not the safest SP1. I do like him. He already had the back issues, and then he's kind of homer prone at times, but I still think he's a really good pitcher. So I was happy with, considering the way I started out with my hitting, I think it's okay just knowing that I had to go really heavy at pitcher after that. And you kind of alluded to me going five out of seven after that, or including that.
And it is a good point, because I didn't even highlight that out of the five options, Ryan was the only one left, like you said. So it was almost like the relief pitching situation all over again, going, oh no, like this, let's get
Pitching's
one of
tough
these.
to decide of the draft in the main event. I kind of knew going into it when I was planning it out, so I was kind of hoping for good luck, but I didn't have a lot of options early on, at least.
Yeah, because basically by the end of round five, Nolan McLean was taken. So I'm not going to count them all, but there's by 15 plus starting pitchers off the board in the top five rounds of this draft, which obviously we were not seeing early and often in draft season. So that is a sign of how the system works. And then we flip it around six. And this is one of the two rounds of this entire draft where I don't know if I off script is the right word to use, but you didn't go to where you mapped it out. You took a shortcut, or I don't know what you used Waze to go somewhere else, and you went and got Emmett Sheehan. Now, was this because live in the moment you're like, oh crap, okay, I only have one starting pitcher, it's round six, like we got to fix this? Or was it looking back at the other options, like, some of them are gone, let's be fair, if not all of them might have been gone. So where were you at on this situation?
Yeah, so going back to round four, I was hoping to get my SP1 there, if not in round three. And since I went with Rooker in round four, I was behind a pitcher spot. So I was planning on getting a hitter when I mapped it out in round six, which is where we are now. And then once Joe Ryan was my SP1, I said I have to come back with like the next best starter in my mind. And yeah, you mentioned McLean went going around the turn after I took Ryan. And so I ended up just pushing up Emmett Sheehan for his ADP. I think his ADP on my sheet was in like the low 90s, and this was pick 78 or 79 around there. And I just didn't care, because this is my first time drafting Sheehan all winter and now spring. And now, and I kind of became okay with this because it's a fab league, and also that Snell's already hurt, and I don't trust Rookie Sasaki to be a thing. So I feel like Sheehan now is a lot safer, and he's actually one of the risers. I mean, I kind of played a role in that too with this ADP, but later in the day at the hotel, I was talking to a Hall of Famer, and he actually took Sheehan earlier than I did in his main. So that made me feel really good about the pick. So
Nice.
some good confirmation bias, I guess.
That's one way to look at it for sure. But you got back onto your roadmap after this. And to be fair, I want to mention this. After the McLean pick at the end of round five, Palencia went to start round six. Sheehan was the next pitcher taken with Ben. that Hoffman and Fairbanks were there. So three of the five picks in round six pitcher wise were closers. So if you are drafting in the main event, or if you're just looking as ADP keeps shifting in regular drafts, we talk about the relief pitching prices. Pete Fairbanks is off the board in round six. So we're definitely into the, we're into the RP2 tier about this time. We're getting there for sure. Heading into round seven now, there's a lot of green in this round. A lot of green. Suzuki, Riley Green, Lou Bob, Bellinger, Springer, Soderstrom all went in the first 11 picks. And then Ben Tidd rolled with one of my guys, Randy Arozarena. So what was your thoughts here? Because I know your target was taken in this round also, and we all know how much that would have meant to me if we could have talked about that tonight. But you went with Arozarena instead, which obviously your third outfielder in your first seven picks, not the worst thing you can do. As we have discussed, the outfield depth gets rough.
Right. Yeah, right. So I was kind of playing with the ADP with I wanted Agustin Ramirez, and he's been falling in mains. I don't know why he's falling the way he is. Nothing's really happened. I think I heard he's having a bad spring, but I don't think it's worthy of him dropping 20 picks or however much he's fallen. So I was hoping to get a good deal on him, but of course he went to a very good player. And with Randy, so I actually passed up someone I had ahead of Randy in my roadmap as a preferred option, which was Cody Bellinger. But Randy fit my team better because I had that great average base, and I had two hitters that aren't going to give me a plus total in steals and Vlad.
To be fair, Walker. Bellinger went before him.
Oh, did he go?
You didn't pass him up.
Oh, my bad. I missed that. Yeah, he was one of the ones you named off. Yeah, good call, Bubba. So, yeah, so it kind of left me with limited options as well because I mentioned Ramirez, Bellinger were gone. And I believe the other two were gone as well. Or nope, was he still the other one? Yeah, they all went. It's kind of the same deal as Joe Ryan. So I was left with the last one standing, and he actually probably fits my team the best, arguably based on the makeup of my hitters before that. So Randy was a pretty easy pick, I think, and it was also my first time drafting him this year, so that was good.
It's a great feeling, I'll tell you that much. Enjoy it. Just be glad you got that batting average start you have. Because that's where that comes into play. Then he doesn't hurt you as bad. Three of your next four picks. We'll start grouping things together here, and so you can get to ADP talk. But three of the next four picks for starting pitchers, and that means by the end of round 11, you had five starting pitchers and one closer. So six of your first 11 picks were pitchers, and so that means your SP3 Nick Lodolo, who you got in round nine. Your SP4 in round you got Lodolo in eight, sorry. In round 10, Shota Umaga. And in round 11, your SP5, Mackenzie Gore, who continues to fall in drafts. Real quickly, if you just reference sake, when you look at the good old the map here, I'd say a few of those are on that board. Your round 11 pick of Gore, I see what you did. It moved around. So, yeah, yep. You got a handful of your targets right here. So what are your thoughts on Lodolo, Shota, and Gore? Three lefties joining the staff.
I love my lefties. Even before people realized it last year, I've always had a tendency to draft lefties, and I kind of did this subconsciously again. But, yeah, I love Lodolo at his price. Even though it's higher than last year. But he showed – I think someone mentioned how good he was in his last dozen starts or so, swing strike-wise Lodolo. So hopefully that continues this year. I had been out on Shota all year draft season until he came to spring training with the increased velocity, because I had showed on a couple teams last year, and at the end it got really scary starting him. Even in my one-man event, I sat him last week or two because I just didn't trust the homers. I looked at the stats the other day, he hasn't had the best spring, Shota, but I think with the increased velocity he should be fine. And then so I have Ryan, Sheehan, Lodolo, Amanaga, all really good whip guys in theory, and because I didn't get a top ace, I didn't have a really big K pitcher. Sheehan kind of rates that way, but who knows how many innings he's going to throw in the Dodgers. You know, I like the skills. Joe Ryan is kind of capped like 170 probably. So I wanted to get Gore, who's good for 180 plus strikeouts, as my SP5. And I've said on whether it's, I don't know if it's been on Bench with Bubba, or I know we talked about it on the live stream for Joe Rico's listener league auction. I think Gore moving to Texas is going to help his whip a lot. And I was willing to take that chance here because of the strikeout upside and the whip cushion I have in my other pitchers. And, yeah, to your point, I ended up – after taking Lodolo and Amanaga in the correct rounds that I was hoping for, I ended up pushing up Gore around early, and then a couple of other guys that are gonna follow. I kind of just like moved them all up the chain, so ended up working out pretty well based on what I planned.
Pretty sure that was Rico's feed when we saw that Mackenzie Gower is projected slightly ahead of Kyle Bradish in WHIP for the season. So never forget the good moments of a draft season streaming. In between those three lefties, you got a shortstop that I'm always a big fan of, and this is one thing when Ryan and I talked about our hitting roadmap recently, is there's kind of like the tiers of shortstops. Like it's a very top-heavy tier, and was the case here. Three went in the first round, five in the first three rounds, seven in the first four, nine in the first five, so on and so forth. You got Dansby Swanson in round nine. He's one of the last ones. Like you got Swanson and somehow Connor Griffin's up in around 10. Jeremy Peña's falling a tad bit. So like then you got Tovar, so on and so forth, who also joined your team in round 11. So you got Dansby Swanson in round nine. I'll just jump to it. Ezekiel Tovar in round 11.
13.
13, sorry, my vision is, even with glasses, not great.
It's okay, though.
But it's an interesting way to showcase. If you don't take one of the top quote unquote shortstops out the gate, you can still get a Swanson Tovar combo, which actually is not too shabby. And you had at least one of them targeted.
Yeah, I did. I think it was Tovar who I targeted. Yeah,
Tovar,
I,
yep.
yeah. And I didn't even have Dansby identified. I actually was hoping to get Willy Adames at this at that pick, which I believe was nine.
He
Yeah,
was your
and he
target,
went.
yes.
Yeah, he went to the guy who took Agustin Ramirez. So I actually forgot about that. I didn't give him crap for taking Willy on
That
me as
guy's
well.
really good at this game, and it's not
Yeah,
cool
so.
because he also took your pitching target in round five. Like I'm going off of this board here.
Yeah.
He had a lot of don't draft with him again.
No, luckily this is a one and done for me and that guy. So,
Yeah.
yeah, but with Swanson, like you mentioned, that he was kind of the last shortstop I was good with as my starter. With pain in the finger, it's just I'm trying to avoid any injury risk that is already there. And is pain doesn't have the most power. And I know, and Dansby's very consistent. And I think he was even a little unlucky last year with his average. And like I said before, I have the good base, and even with Randy and Swanson, my team still projected at the end of the draft to be above my average target. So it ended up working out. Dansby's good for that volume. He's going to get 75 to 80 runs in RBIs. Going to get close to 20-20. So I thought that was a great balanced shortstop to pick on. And want to touch on Tovar real quick?
Yeah, good. Talk about that because he's been a name that's slowly getting talked about more and more as we get towards the end of draft season.
Right. He just jumps off the page on projections. He's playing in cores. He's gonna hit top three in the lineup. And one thing, so we did. So before that, I got took Ian Happ. But besides Vlad, up to this point, it's the 13th round. All my hitters are either shortstops or outfielders, besides Vlad, which I'm fine with. But looking at the board, it's just funny to see the lack of color that I had in my draft board so far.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to comment on. It's pretty much outfield now, shortstop, and all pitching outside of Vlad. And let's get more outfielders. Rounds 12 and 14, you get a Tovar sandwich in between two outfielders. And you got one of the most boring, prototypical 15 team, and I have plenty of shares, so I'm not clowning on this, but he's just a 15 team dude. Time and time again, that's Ian Happ. You picked up in round 12. You can almost write his stat line in now. Because for a couple of years, it was, are you power or are you average, Ian? Which one is it? Well, he kind of has told us, at least showcased it in recent years. So you can hit on Happ, but the one I'm more interested in your thoughts, and I think it's a really worth the, I guess, gamble right now, is the Law Dog. You picked up Lawrence Butler early in round 14, and this is a guy that early in draft season was going much higher. Then all this injury stuff, he had knee surgery, still not back, still not back, has been falling. We just saw recently, I think it was today, maybe. Yeah, it was Monday morning, I think, or Sunday morning, one of the two. He's running bases, supposed to be in the lineup Tuesday or Wednesday this week, which would be great. So in theory, the Law Dog could be a heck of a value if that pans out. When you do this draft, we still did not know what his status was. But you got an Ian Happ, Lawrence Butler. So you have five outfielders through 14 rounds. What were your thoughts on this one? And both of these guys were on your target sheets.
Yeah, Butler was actually an option for me in the 11th, but then I had to take Gore there because of how I started with pitching. And yeah, so I ended up getting Butler 3 rounds after I was hoping for, and he'll show up in the ADP if we go over the fallers based on the two chunks of main events. Butler's one of the big fallers, but for me and him, for me, when it comes to him, and we talked about Butler, I think on the Oopsie show we did, how Oopsie especially loved him projections wise and compared to where he's going in, where he was going in ADP and DCs. But at least with Butler, like, he got the surgery to fix his knee. Yeah, he has the arthritis, I guess, in the other one. I don't know if it's the same one, but Jordan, besides last year, he's been able to play through that as well. And then Butler had it treated, and it's not like he's hurt now. They're just trying to manage his ramp up for the season. And they were saying how he's gotten so many, it's not game at bats, but the simulated at bats where they're kind of facing a live pitcher. It's almost the exact same thing. Less pressure, of course, but Butler's another 2020 guy, and he's playing in Sacramento, which could help him. And if he was playing, if he did what he did last year hurt, and now he's healthy, I think Butler could, especially now that he got him closer to pick 200. I think that pick was 199, actually, the 14th for me. Yeah, I'm fine. And he's my, like you said, he's my outfielder five. So it's all, even if he gets hurt or something, I still have four other really good outfielders, and I can kind of afford that chance. And I guess, so looking back on my draft, it felt kind of not safe, but I didn't take anyone extreme, like in one way or the other. But I feel like Butler has the highest upside probably based on where I took him out of anyone so far.
Yeah, and just for referencing, we will talk ADP risers and fallers, but if somehow we miss out on Law Dog, the pockets we have is the March 8th through March 13th draft. There's five drafts. And then just this past week in the 14th and 15th, there's seven drafts. So comparing the two, Law Dog has dropped like seven picks. Like the first five drafts that took place last week is the ADP around 181. Just over the weekend, 188. So he dropped seven picks. Ben, you said he was talking about 199. So, yeah, you got an even bigger. Like, we don't have the min maxes because we don't need them, but you probably got potentially the quote unquote greatest perceived value of Lawrence Butler, which I think it's a phenomenal pick. I'm not just saying that because we're on the show and everything, but I told you that when you texted us your team earlier, that getting him, like, to what you said is for people out there that debate taking risks in draft, and I get it. Like, some people, I'm super cautious early. Most of us are. But like you said, he's your fifth outfielder. And we know a healthy Law Dog at worst is your outfielder three. At worst. Like, he has the potential to be an outfielder one if he can hit for average. Like, he's that good. So that's a big boy move. I like that one quite a bit. And if all else fails, it's like pick 200. You're dropping people past this anyways. So all good on that one. So that was pretty sweet. To round out the first half of the draft, you picked up your second closer in the 15th round. So you picked up David Bednar in round three. You got your starting pitchers, your outfielders, your shortstops. So we're still sticking to the certain color pattern here. but you got Robert Garcia as your RP2. And if people look at the board, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez went in round 13. No closers right in round 14. This is the only closer in round 15. Just using that as a point of reference, we're into the bottom end of the SP or the RP2. Like, you're getting close. We haven't talked about, I guess, Riley O'Brien's yet of the world, but that's where you're headed is where I'm going with that. So what was your thought here on taking Robert Garcia?
Yeah, he's actually my target, Garcia, in the 18th round, which would have been pick 259, but in the 200s, I care less about ADP, and I like Garcia a lot more than Riley O'Brien and Yates, who I had identified as my RP2. So instead of playing ADP check, and I figured just take him at 222 instead of 259, Garcia, and to secure who I think is the safer of the three that I mentioned just now. And I'm fine with that. I still was able to get a solid catcher afterwards. I think I actually got sniped because I wanted Ivan Herrera at this pick, who went right before me. And that was annoying because I didn't have a catcher yet either. And then I was just saying to myself, even if Herrera is my util hitter for 3 months, he's still great. He's going to help with my average. He steals a little bit. He's going to have good power. And he's going to top of the Cardinals lineup. So I was annoyed when he got taken right before I got Garcia. But so at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to mess around. I'm just going to grab my RP2 and be good for the rest of the draft.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, you had him in the 18th round, which would be like 259. Obviously, you pushed him up to the 15th, which is around 222. But like the other closers you mentioned, like one went in round 22, the other one went in round 17. So if you would have waited, you would have been stuck with one of the three options. You would have had to push him up essentially, as he's taking it for a pretty good fall in drafts these days. So there's a reason you had to push up Garcia, because again, for those that are maybe new to building the roadmap, Ben uses ADP. He'll whatever pocket he decides he wants, or time frame, I should say. And yeah, so he was basically building his map, and those players were in that ADP range. But in the draft, my point is 15th round, 17th round, 22nd round. So they jumped all over the place. All right, second half of the draft, you mentioned how you did not have a catcher yet. Well, you got that fixed sort of in round 16 with your first catcher. I meant sort of because it's your first one. You got Dylan Dingler, who he had the shoulder injury. I'm still fine with Dylan Dingler. He's a catcher too for many, but we joked about it in our chat. We joked about it on this show, what you did last year. You know how to work with catchers that aren't projected early in drafts. So was this kind of a, I don't know, forced pick is the right word. You get deeper into drafts, you start changing your program anyways. But the fact you haven't had a catcher yet, you're seeing the catching pool dwindle. Was this guy, hey, I got to get at least one now or it's going to get really ugly?
Yeah, because I was trying to – so one thing about being on the turn that's good is that I can kind of look at the roster grid to see how everyone's looking position-wise. And catcher was kind of light around me. Team 15 had Yiner Diaz. Team 14 had Alejandro Kirk. Team 13 didn't have a catcher. And Team 11 didn't have a catcher, and I'm Team 12. So I knew that my end of the draft was going to start needing catchers, and this was my pick going away from me. So this is the 16th round where it's going back towards the front half of the draft. So I was going to have like 20 picks go by until it came back to me. So I wanted, and I like Dingler more than guys like Jeffers and Stevenson and Wells who went after I took him. And I even passed on Gabriel Moreno because I don't think he has a lot of power. And I think he's kind of hurting it right now anyway. So I didn't really want to take that risk with my catcher one. And Dingler, I think he lost his red note in the NFBC player notes. So I think he's, as far as we're concerned, he's healthy now. So that's good. And Kyle Teal ended up going afterwards. I actually wanted him in my next pick. Got sniped again. So I would have double tapped catcher. But that Team 11 got me a few times.
Yeah, I got, yeah. When Ben says sniped, literally the pick right before him, there's catcher went right after him too. It's one of those feelings in a 15 team where like the elites get pushed up and then that bottom portion gets murky quick. And if you start dancing too much, it's not a great feeling as you go farther down the board. But you didn't get Kyle Teal, and you already had two shortstops. So two of your next three picks were second baseman. So one could be a util, one could be on the bench. One, I know your plan here. I'll let you discuss it with him. But you got the bus driver, Otto Lopez, in round 17. Everyone knows my ringing endorsement of that pick. And then in round 19 is an old favorite of mine, Luis Garcia Jr., who the price this year compared to recent years is amazing. He used to go for so much more, it felt like, than this year, which makes the platoon much more appetizing with Luis Garcia Jr. So were you purposely trying to get in on the second base pool now, or did you have a game plan in place?
So how did I identify it? I think I had my catcher, my second baseman, the one in my roadmap would have been, I don't think I even wrote one down, honestly. No, I don't think I really had an actual plan for taking one. I would have been fine waiting because I think all the guys in the 200s and for second are relatively fine.
Yep.
But with Otto, he's been very popular in DCs, mainly I think because of second shortstop eligibility, and he's a solid 15-15 hitter. He's going to play every day. There's no platoon issues. That's why I went with him ahead of Garcia Jr. And good average. And I think he's just a solid, boring 15-team play that he's young enough where he could actually improve probably. I'm not planning on it, but it's always a chance. So he was a pretty good buy there in round 17. And then, yeah, looking at the actual pick for Luis Garcia, he's picked 282 for me. And I haven't ranked much higher than that. And the only thing against him is the platooning, but at this point, there's tons of platoon outfielders, and Garcia is actually my util player. But, and you alluded to my plan for him, so hopefully he stays at first base, and then he'll end up sliding into my CI position once he gets first base eligibility, and that would free up my util spot, because even though it seems like second base is my weak spot, actually third base is my weak spot. And
yes, we're about to hit on that.
Yes. Yeah, which something has to be weak, though, in a 15-teamer. So, and I'm okay with, like I said, like my outfield and shortstop, golden. Assuming, as long as Vlad's healthy, first base is golden. So it's I'm okay building a team like this.
Yeah, no, like you literally like the outfield, shortstop, even second base looks good. I don't mind your catchers for waiting so long. You're starting pitching, you have depth. Relief pitching, we'll see if it's all about depends on Garcia. If Garcia can be half decent, you're good there. So I'm gonna start kind of pocketing things together here. And I was going to discuss third base. So I'm glad you brought that up. In round 20, right after Garcia, you went with Carlos Correa. And then in round 26, you went with Josh Jung, who's returning to game action on Tuesday or Wednesday. That should be okay, hopefully. And then in round 30, you took a dart on Jordan Westberg, who still has no timetable for return. So you mentioned you had a weakness. Like Carlos Correa is boring, but he's going to be third base shortstop, actually, if Pena misses enough time. But he's going to hit for like 20 home runs, decent average, nothing crazy. Josh Jung is a ceiling floor play, and then Jordan Westberg, who knows? So what was your thoughts when you're entering round 20? You know you got 10 picks left, you have no third baseman, even though a ton of pink is on this board from round 20 on. Where were your what was your game plan, and how do you think it went for you, or what's your plan now?
Yeah, I'm looking at the roadmap. I didn't actually really, I don't think I actually identified a third baseman either when I was doing my road mapping, which is fine. I'm more worried about the stats and the positions. And with Correa, he was kind of like the last one because Beatty had just gone. If Beatty didn't go at the turn, I probably would have taken him over Correa. I like Beatty's upside more. And he's corner middle eligible versus, well, actually Correa is too, but I didn't need any more shortstop help. So it's kind of whatever, that shortstop eligible Correa. But he's, as long as he's, well, he's gonna start out the season healthy, and then once he gets hurt, Correa, then whatever. And Young is, yeah, he's the floor ceiling play because Young had a good year. His first year, he had over 20 homers, 70 runs, 70 RBIs, and around 26, I want that ceiling. So with Young, it's really just been his health. So if I can take that chance there, he could easily replace Correa as my third baseman if Young actually reaches that ceiling again. And then Westberg, so at a spoiler, I don't have a backup first baseman, but my first pick was a first or second pick was a first baseman, so I'm okay doing that because Vlad's in my lineup as long as he's healthy. And with Westberg, I liked him until he came into camp destroyed by whatever happened to him. And now I was looking at his note, Westberg, and it sounds like he could come back in April, but since it's his arm, if he's good enough to DH, maybe he DHs only. So it's just more of a 30th round pick. If he gets good news, it's a massive value at this point because 30 round picks never hit, it feels like, especially in a fab league. So it's just one of those things where my third base was weak, so might as well take a third one and see if I can hit.
Yep, no, that's another shot in the dark, which could be huge. Like it's the law dog play, just 16 rounds later. So I get it with your last pick. See what happens. If not, easy drop. If there's a setback or whatever, and plus you mentioned you don't have another first baseman, but in theory, you're hoping Luis Garcia gets there. There's
That's
also a
true.
handful. There's also a handful that didn't get drafted in this draft. Like some, at least I'll say that will pop up throughout the season. Some of your pitchers you had here, you stuck to the lefty train with Noah Cameron in round 18, Jacob Lopez in round 22, when news came out on Monday that Lopez is the favorite for the fifth spot in Sacramento. Then you got a righty, a couple of righties in Brandon Sproat and Simeon Woods Richardson, another lefty combos in Kikuchi, Lats, and Leahy. So you peppered starting pitching is why I wanted to mention this. We talked about you had like five starting pitchers in the first 10 picks. And then in this just the last 15 here, it's one, two, three, four, five, seven of your final 15 picks were starting pitchers. So you only left the draft with two closers, not a problem. Just mentioning that for those out there. And you had what, 12 starting pitchers?
Yes.
So what was the game plan there? Were you purposely peppering the position, or just kind of how the end rounds played out?
Well, if you look at my roadmap from picks 13 through 7 or through 16, so that's four there, I was identifying hitters. And shout out to you and Ryan. I told you guys this actually. So when I got to the hotel and before I had to go in for my draft, I was doing what you guys do. So I did my roadmap ahead of time at home, and then at the hotel, I did the bigger look roadmap just to confirm my plan. So I was looking at chunks of 50 ADP and just seeing, because in my sheet I have it color coded for if I'm ahead of ADP on a guy based on my personal ranking of him or not, a red and green. And I was just looking at, okay, how many green hitters are there in this 50 chunk range of ADP, or how many pitchers do I do not like, or stuff like that. or just how many go in general. And it's, and because of the way the main event is, all these starters that we like kind of closer to in the 200s, they tend to go up because there's a little less certainty with them. Like they could have good skills or could it be injury risks. But now that we're drafting a main event where there's Fab and there's the overall, these guys with high upside are going to fly up the board. And by the time I had a list of guys I wanted instead of in addition to Noah Cameron, he was the last one left in that list when it came time for me to pick him. So I'm like, okay, this is an easy click. It may have been around earlier. I forget. I'd have to look or compare. But he's fine. I think he's kind of safe. Not a big K guy, but I think his swing strike was better than what his K rate actually was, Cameron. So I think there's upside there. And I've been in on Jacob Lopez in DCs. He had a really good strikeout rate last year. And then Sproat, it's kind of sad because I like Quinn Priester and Logan Henderson a lot, and they're both banged up a little bit. So I went with the other Brewer who I don't mind, Sproat. And then, Kikuchi, he fell a lot. I think I was talking to the guilds who had him last year afterwards, and he goes, oh, you're the one who took Kikuchi? I'm like, I don't know. He's got K upside, and maybe I can pick my spots with him. And if he's horrible, he's my pitcher 10, so I can always just drop him anyway. And then Lats, kind of same line as Lopez, good K upside, lefty. And I think Leahy, I was looking at spring training stats during the draft, and Leahy actually has a lot of strikeouts right now.
Yes.
There's some questions with me with him and his walk rate because he was a reliever last year. And then when he was a starter in the minors, he had awful walk problems. But he, as a reliever last year for the Cardinals, he kind of curbed that. But as in round 29, I can gamble that he finds the strike zone and actually is a serviceable starter. So nothing really to lose there.
Yeah, I love the Leahy pick. Like if we're going late darts, I remember talking with Matt Thompson on my Cardinals preview. He said Leahy's probably the best pitcher in the rotation. If they let him actually be the guy that he can be, not like tinker with them and make him go back and forth bullpen or whatever. Right now, he's projected to be in the rotation. So if that stands, like if you look at, like you mentioned, his strikeouts this spring, we saw an increase last year just in general as a reliever. Like there's a skill set there. And if you go throughout the minor leagues, like he's in 2023 in the minor, he's basically got a 9 K per 9 and at a lot of stops, which is at that pick I'll take. Like you obviously look at K to walk, K percentage, mostly over 20% at a lot of levels. Walks can be an issue, but that's, you see that with youth a lot. So I like him a lot. And then I like, as a late pick also, love Jacob Lats. I've talked about him a lot. As a guy that he had really good moments when he spot started last year. He also kind of like Leahy, got bullpen started, minor leagues, like he was all over the place. But when he got his spot starts, he was really strong as well. And that Texas bullpen is not the best when it comes to health, is the way I'll put it. So there's a world where Lats actually might start the season in the rotation, if not be up pretty quickly. So I like both of those as late darts. I think Lopez has all these guys are, to me, and you'll get a lot of this late in the draft. Like Leahy, I think I took in the reserves in my OLAC. So, yeah, big stuff there. The Kikuchi comment makes me laugh because basically Gills is speaking from the heart of someone that has rostered Kikuchi. And I relate. I know Ryan relates because we were both all in on him last year. Scott Burks from the Discord, he's brought up a good point. Like there's good splits with Kikuchi. If you want to play that game, that's annoying, but you can. Yeah, it's just like the skills are, it's like he's a tough pitcher because the skills are good. Consistency is out the window with him. Then the last player we have not mentioned, there's Jake McCarthy, who's your sixth outfielder. So you have a backup outfielder that can be sneaky in Colorado. You can play that game. And then Carson Kelly is your catcher too, who I don't mind at all as a catcher too. I try not to get down there, but he's in my queue in my last couple of 15s. Let's put it that way. Like certain things have to give. And lately I've been giving at catcher too, which some people frown upon, Ben, but I'm okay living there. And obviously it looks like you are too.
Yeah. It wasn't really part of the plan. Cause I wanted Teal. And then, so team 11 also signed me on Austin Wells in round 19. Cause I was going to go, okay, I'll take Wells as my SP or catcher too. Cause I was fine in average. Of course he went right before me again. Yes, I wasn't happy with Team 11 a lot. But, Kelly's fine. And I told people there, I told you and Ryan, that I'll be in on Joe Mack and Jimmy Crooks when I get called up. So it's fine. There'll be guys who get called up or guys who emerge. So it's whatever.
There is a long list of guys that will be getting called up this year. And there's even guys that are already called up. Like when Kyle Teal comes back, Edgar Carroll could get dropped. Let's just be real.
That too.
Like there's a lot of those kind of moving and shaking pieces that are going to happen this year. And just like every year, might not be as, you know, great as the last couple seasons of catcher, but there will be a handful, and you executed it quite well last season. Final thoughts on this team. Like, I love the team. Like I told you when you texted it Saturday, just for a main event, for the balance approach, for like just between us talking throughout the last like couple years, just knowing kind of how your brain works and the players you like to target. I think you did a lot of what you wanted to do. Obviously your roadmap showed it. I think this is a Ben Tidd draft to a T. And you know, with your recent success, I think I'd like to leave with a Ben Tidd draft. So at least you're set up to be in the right spot. Now you have, you know, 27 weeks of fab to figure out.
Yeah, real quick. So I'm literally Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football when it comes to Jake McCarthy. Because remember how many times I added him last year and dropped him? So
that was one of your favorites. Yes.
But overall, so thanks, Bubba. I'm glad you like it. I didn't do this for this, but when I did tweet it, I got some pretty positive comments. So people seem to like it. So I appreciate everyone who said something nice about my team. I will say though, I felt really good about this draft last year, and the team came in like 12th or 10th.
Wasn't your best team the third draft you did?
Yeah, it was the last one. So I'm not trying to go full guilds this year, but I really want to have three competitive main events, and it seems like this one should be like that, assuming health and all that. I hope I did enough with my pitchers after starting late with my starters, but definitely had some ceiling there with Sheehan and Gore. And if I had Lodolo and Amanaga on that main event last year, so I went right back to them. So if they can just kind of maintain those skills, I think the pitching should be okay. Hopefully I'll hit on one of those upside guys we talked about at the end.
I don't know about you, but the way he plays lately, I'd like to go full guilds. So I think that's not a bad recipe for
innings. Well, I'm talking about the guilds results. I'm joking. Getting there is going to be a challenge.
I'd like to get those results. Like, I'll take that any day of the week right about now. And then I saved this, but because the very first comment in the YouTube, Randy Haynes, spoiler, Ben had a really good draft. So, yes, it wasn't just me trying to kiss your butt, Ben. Many, many people did. Let's talk ADP now. I mentioned it briefly with the Law Dog Ben put together. Like, this is how good Ben and Ryan are. I'm fortunate to work with these two. It's like 3 hours before the show. I go, hey Ben, I got an idea. Yeah, I can do it. No problem. Sweet. Like, sounds good. So we looked at, like, last episode we talked about kind of main event risers and fallers compared to DCs, comparing 15s, because it was the first week in the draft, very fresh, not a big sample of main events. Well, still, like, to some, not a big sample. You're a statistical guy. Tell me what's right or wrong in that theory, but I know sample size counts. But to me, it's a big sample because the market shifts so much in main events. Like, there's a ton of moving and shaking. So just, we talked about it's March 8th to March 13th. It's 5 days. There was five drafts, one draft a day. This past weekend on the 14th and 15th, seven drafts. So we're comparing the 7 weekend drafts to the five initial drafts, risers and fallers, because there were some pretty dramatic ones, Ben. So I'm just going to kick things off here because you were so courteous to color code things. And I'm going to go down to some of the bigger ones. But like the first one that really stands out, close to a 5-pick differential, is in a way a faller. In a world where starting pitching gets pushed up, Ben, Yoshinobu Yamamoto got pushed down. Yamamoto is going 5 picks later. He started out around 24 and a half in the first, you know, five drafts. Over the weekend, his ADP was closer to 29 and a half. It's like a 5-pick drop, which to me is interesting, Ben, because a lot of people think he's their SP4. Now he's going almost at the 2-3 turn, which the way pitching goes off the board is probably SP6, 7, depends on where, maybe 8, depends on where it goes. So that's just, it's not like a massive jump, but we're talking beginning of second round to end of second round. That's pretty big at this stage of the game. So what's your thoughts on seeing like a guy like Yamamoto when most starting pitching comes up? One of the quote-unquote top four or five is actually dropping.
Yeah, so I see four guys who actually are the reason behind that. Three are closers. Cade Smith has leapfrogged him. Johan Duran has leapfrogged him. Lindor leapfrogged him because I think Lindor, there's good news about his wrist, he's playing. And then Andrés Muñoz is still behind him in ADP recently, but he's gained three spots, and he's narrowed the gap on Yamamoto. So there's probably some drafts where Munoz is going ahead of Yamamoto. And I think it's just people are worried about the closer. And then you're getting that stud first, second round hitter who's getting positive news. And I think that's why Yamamoto is getting pushed down. I don't know if I'm okay with that because I'm not as high on Yamamoto as some others were to start main events. But I think those four players are really the reason why he's getting pushed down.
That's a great point. Like Mason Miller's up four picks. He was picked average ADP of 18 over the weekend. But just to kind of wrap up what you meant there, like closers wise, Miller is going off the board at around 18. Edwin Diaz at 23, Cade Smith at 26.5, Yoan Duran at 28, Munoz at 30. So there's five closers basically in the first two rounds. And I think we've said there might have been six in yours. Like it's wild stuff. But and if there's anybody I skip over, feel free to mention them. I'm just kind of trying to hit some of the bigger ones. I did think it's interesting. It's about a five pick jump again, but Yordan Alvarez is getting some love, Ben. He's showing he's healthy. He's showing he's going to probably play some more outfield, which I don't know if I like, honestly. But in the first five drafts, his ADP was close to 46. Now it's about 41 over the weekend. So Yordan's getting pushed up. I've always compared Yordan to basically Vladdy. Like if Yordan played a full season, he's probably Vladdy with more power, honestly. But maybe he doesn't have the same, like a slight average dip. But right. It's just the playing time, of course. What are your thoughts on seeing this Yordan improvement? Because I have a hunch if he has another healthy week come Vegas, he's probably like middle of, like, or maybe gets closer to the beginning of round three than the end.
Well, going back to my roadmap, he was actually ahead of Rooker in my targets, Yordan, and he went at pick 37. So he was even higher in my main event than the weekend as a whole. So I would have been, if Yordan was there to me in round three, I would have, or round four. Well, I still wanted Bednar ahead of him, but yeah, based on ADP, I thought there was a chance Yordan could have fallen to me and early in the fourth round, but instead he's going mid third round now. So, and I'm fine with the outfield as long as it happens early. So get the eligibility, Yordan, and then go back to DHing. I'll be cool with that. But yeah, I think he's been a great discount. And like I said, he was kind of a target for me here, and hopefully I can afford to get him before the season's over.
So Yordan over Brent Rooker. It sounds like, though, I'm just thinking that out loud, but so it sounds like if you want Yordan, because I still feel like he stays in the third round. That means you're going pitching in one of the first two rounds, I'm guessing. So that's just where my brain's at watching this.
If it fits.
Evil Zilla says Yordan is better than Vlad if no injury. I don't argue that. It's just we know the injuries show up. Now we got some big movers here. Like Logan Webb actually moved up about five spots. Wasn't going to touch on him. DeGrom moved up. Freed moved up. Langford's up. So DeGrom about four picks. Freed 3.5 picks. Webb five picks. There's your starting pitching. It's not necessarily the first two rounds, Ben. This is your rounds. Basically from round four going into round three or late three into early round three moves here. So you got to stay aggressive in that regard. But I want to hit on, we got another closer. It's the first, or Bednar was after, Bednar Devin Williams went after Munoz in round three. But now, like you mentioned, how you got Bednar, you had the other options was a few guys, but Chapman goes here. Chapman has fallen. This is what was interesting to me. You got all these guys on the run. Chapman's gone from pick 41 in the first five drafts down to pick 47. So he's dropped six picks into round four. I have zero clue why, besides starting pitching getting moved up, I guess. But for the amount of relief pitcher love, to see him be the guy that falls surprised me.
Yeah, it's weird. So the only thing I can think of, Bubba, and I kind of mentioned this, was in my roadmap, I mentioned how tough starting pitching is when you're on the back end. And the other guys going in that range now are Logan Webb, Peralta, and Fried and DeGrom. So if someone who's drafting, like I did, 12 to 15 in a 15, if one of the top three don't fall to you, and then if you don't want to pull up Christopher Sanchez or whoever your SP4 is, you're waiting to the 3-4 turn. So then that's where the Grom, Freed, Peralta, and Webb come in. And that's why I decided I'm passing. Well, actually, I think they all went before it got back to me for my fourth round pick. So those turn guys are seeing that they're running out of starting pitching options, because if they wait, it's going to be like pick 75, the 5-6 turn, which is going to be a lot different quality of pitcher. So that's why, I think that's why these guys are jumping to Chapman, and people are like, hey, well, I'll deal with closers later. Something like that, probably. At least that's where my head is at when I look at the ADP changes and how I was kind of planning out my draft.
Well, makes sense. Three more big fallers. Like we're starting to actually get to our first more than five pickers right about now. We just talked about Aroldis Chapman. Zach Neto has dropped nearly 10 picks from 38.5 to 48.5. Basically goes from a round three guy to a round four guy. That's a massive drop. And we'll see if that keeps going with the wrist injury. He was taking batting practice on Monday, so appears to have dodged a bullet. Ketel Marte's dropped 5.5 picks. He's going around pick 50 over the weekend. A bit surprising. And then James Wood dropping 8 picks. He went around pick 43, dropping to pick 52 right now. Three interesting names there. Like Neto, I know there's a lot of people worried about contact skills. Ketel Marte, not sure about this. They, obviously, people have to move because pitching, like I know stuff changes. But it's always just interesting. Then James Wood, I think there's a lot of concerns there. So any thoughts on those three?
This is funny because Neto and Marte and Wook and Wood, they were going around the 2-3 turn in DCs. And now they're going way past that. And
I'm getting closer to 4-5 than
2-3. Yeah, it's wild. And with no, and so Neto was already there before he got hurt. So there was, it's just wild that he's like a, he could be 30-30 Neto with an average that may not kill you. He's kind of, he kind of projects like Jazz Chisholm, except he's a shortstop, I think.
That's fair. That's fair.
So I don't get why he's going so much later. If anything, I guess the, he kind of dodged a bullet with the wrist, so I guess he's kind of more of a target now if you're not too concerned. And I think – so I was watching The Ultimate, which was streamed by FTN, Vlad Sedler, Toby, your former co- – actually, who I kind of replaced. And then Mark Winoker, he was on for the ton of the stream. So all good guys, all great players. And during that draft that they were covering, Marte went to like the seventh round or something crazy. So I don't really know why. Nothing's wrong. I guess people just think he's boring or injury prone. Wood, the K issues. And then I think those are the three. Yeah. It's just, they're just, I guess, boring, but solid hitters, which if you plan for pitching early, I guess they're good values for hitters when you need hitting.
All right. Let's talk about two bats on the rise though. Now we're starting to get really going here. Bryce Terang. I don't know if it's a great WBC where he's actually hitting the ball really well again, but Terang was around pick 65 in the first five drafts. Over the weekend, around pick 56, about a 9-pick jump for Bryce Terang. And then Austin Riley, a guy that I still have in the back of my mind, been saying, go higher. I have him rated higher, priced higher. Still never got him. Riley had an ADP of 66 over the first five drafts, 56 over the weekend, a 10-pick jump for Austin Riley. So Terang and Riley both getting quite the boost. Like I said, Terang in the WBC, Austin Riley at the third base position and a power spot potentially. And who knows, maybe it was the rumor they might run more. Who knows? But what's your thoughts on these two?
Yeah, Dirty Bird mentioned it in the chat, kind of with second base being weak. I think that's just why Terang's going up. But I was fine waiting. I said before, I just don't really trust what skills or stats we're going to get from Terang. So it's kind of hard for me to pay that much of a price, not really knowing what the production's going to look like. And then Riley is, it's really upsetting because I checked my player shares on him as you were talking, and I am on 2 teams out of 9 now, which it's better than none or one, but him going in the fourth round now is actually the norm. I thought it was an anomaly for my draft, but 56 is the middle of the mid to late fourth of a 15 teamer. And he was going more closer to like 70 something, Riley. So he's made at least a round jump. And I think nothing's really changed. It's that the projections always loved him. And I think a lot of the main event drafters see that and that it was pulling him up. I think Jason Santo actually took, and I'm fine saying this because his team was in the live stream that FTM did that I mentioned. He took Riley in the fourth in the ultimate, which is a 5K buy-in. And Jason, if anyone doesn't know who he was, he finished second and third in the main event 2 years ago overall.
His first year playing the WBC, by the way.
Yeah, like this, he was saying how this is like his third year doing the ultimate, and he wanted to find something, so he found this league of all things. Good stamp of approval from him on Riley, and I love Riley too as a bounce back. So it's kind of annoying that I don't know if I'm going to want to take him in the fourth. I don't know. It's something I have to decide on, but it's just annoying to see him jump like this when I think it is deserved.
That's why we're having these conversations and talking about these changes, because like this is the market going forward. And yes, these are main event ADPs, and people listening might go, I don't play the main event. That's fine. Like I play auctions, and I know like the correlation in auction prices has kind of shifted with this, and guys playing in our Discord that just played the $500 OLAC over on Sunday said their prices mimicked the main event. Like there was a lot of similarities there. I bet you if you're doing an OC next week, it might not be as steep because it's 12 team. You're going to see a lot of certain guys moving up and down. There'll be some correlations with this. So we're just throwing things out to pay attention to as there will be markets moving this final week of draft season. Framber Valdez has moved up 7 spots, so he's getting a bit of a boost. But I want to talk about all these double-digit gainers here. Jaron Duran, he's moved up over 10 picks ADP of 78 over the first five drafts. It's now about 68 right now. Durant was a guy I have kind of been enjoying the discount on, weirdly enough, because I'm not a big Durant fan, but like he's projected to hit cleanup. Looks like they're not trading him, Ben. We know the speed's legit. What power shows up? Does he hit for better? Like, I think last year was probably his floor, and we might be able to get back to his ceiling. So I keep seeing that price tag, and I'm like, it wasn't that long ago he was like a third-round pick, and now we're dropped again. So it's almost like the Lawrence Butler situation, but he's not hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, it's an interesting one, Durant. I actually was doing some stuff on Yahoo for my home league, and he's in the 40s by their rankings, which is kind of wild to see. That stood out to me for Durant. And maybe it's because during DCs we're worried about his splits versus lefties, but maybe there's less people aren't as concerned anymore with that. I don't really know what's happened with Durant, but I guess maybe because of the steals he offers, that's kind of why he's getting pushed up, because he could be like a 20-30 guy again, hitting leadoff for a good lineup. So it makes sense, but it's kind of weird that he's going up, whereas someone like CJ Abrams is falling, where I think they have kind of similar profiles. So it's interesting to see.
Yep, totally agree with you there. Daniel Palencia has up 7.5 picks. Glad I got those early shares. He went for like $20 in an auction over the weekend. So my days of Daniel Palencia are probably gone. Unfortunately, he's filthy. People are seeing it. Mookie Betts has dropped almost 12.5 picks. He's going around pick 76 now, Ben. I think most people, if they listen to this show long enough, know my thoughts on Mookie Betts. Do you have anything to add on this? Because I am not surprised.
It feels a little extreme, but I also have not wanted to draft Betts once this year. But it just feels like the 5, that's the 5-6 turn and a 15. I don't know if I'd take him still, honestly. Because he was declining before he had the injury or the illness last year. And people could say he was hurt the year before, but that's 2 years of pretty bad barrel rates for Betts. And he's getting older, so... Yeah, maybe his creators. Who knows?
Yep. We got CJ Abrams has fallen 6.5 picks, which I continue to draft him if that's the case. Thank you very much. But here we go. This is your wheelhouse. Emmett Sheehan is up 12 picks, Ben. You talked about it when you took him in your draft. ADP of 93 over the first five. ADP of 81 over the weekend. You took him at like 77 or something. Like, so you're part of the problem here. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I am part of the problem.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier why you took him here, but do you believe that this bump of 12 picks makes sense, I guess, is the question?
So using my thinking, there's a cliff, and especially if you're on the back end of the draft, because after Sheehan, if it goes Pivetta, who I think is way overdrafted, then it was Wheeler, I know you like Wheeler. I don't trust the skills will return to what they were after the injury. Like Mizorowski went in the 7th round of my draft. Touching him there. No, thank you. Chase Burns. I don't know if that tweet was real about him being in the minors, but he went later in the 7th. And then you're to Gossman, Lodolo, and Schlittler. But I like them as my SP3 and a 15. I don't want them as my SP2. And I think Sheehan has those skills. I think his swing strike rate last year was almost 14%. In a pretty decent amount of work. He plays for the best team in baseball, so the win should be there. So I think Sheehan's just like, he's one of those guys who it's clear how he can take the next step and be a top SP1 potentially. So I think that's what's happening.
My only concern is they limit his innings, but I guess you just take what you can get and see where it goes, because skills are great.
Per inning, he's going to be awesome, which I think is kind of what you're asking for.
Agreed. Full agreed. To your point, Wheeler's up 13 picks, gone from 96 the first five to 83 over the weekend. Throws a bullpen. He's expected back late April, early May. So people are thinking stash for a month in the top 100. Like, I like Zach Wheeler a lot. I can't get there. I almost spent like $11 on him in my OLAC. And then I'm kind of bummed I didn't get him for $11, but I'm also kind of glad like someone else outbid me in that one, because I do think he'll be fine at that price point, but if this price keeps going up, there's zero chance I draft Zach Wheeler. Scrolling down the board here, Cody Bellinger's up 7 points. I think that kind of makes sense, you know, at home. Power speed, you talked about him in your deal. Gossman's up 7. O'Neill Cruz is moving up, but another double-digit one. This one, all right. Tyler Glasnow is up almost 11 picks, Ben. He's going around pick 105 right now. Tyler Glasnow is technically healthy right now. We know that much. But what are your thoughts on this jump? Is it literally like, let's see what we can get for 50 to 100 innings and then bounce at this point?
Probably, yeah. And it's just the when we did the other show you mentioned, the DC versus main event, it's just all pitchers kind of creep up. And I think it's just really that with Glasnow.
Yeah, no, that is very fair. I was surprised to see that bump with him. A few others, Michael Harris is up 8.5. So we're seeing some outfielders jump with Bellinger, Cruz, Harris, some of those kind of power speed guys on the move. Kenley Jansen's up 5. Pepio's up 7. Nate the Great Eovaldi, Ben, is up 15 picks from 129 to 114. This, to me, feels like people finally trust the health. He's going to be the opening day starter. Is that where you're at on this one? Because that was the only concern I could have possibly had.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of Evaldi, but I didn't. But I liked his price, though. And I think he just had a great spring training start. And I think to Ryan's concern when Ryan was talking about him, who he's loved so much in the past, Evaldi seems to be healthy now, which as long as he starts out that you're healthy, he's probably going to give you a decent number of innings. Then he'll probably break down in August or September, and then you drop him. But when he's pitching Evaldi, he's going to be great for you. So I think that's really what it is.
Now we get to some I'm going to just highlight a handful of drops, like fallers real quick, and maybe we'll go back to a few risers. But Spencer Strider dropped 25 picks, ADP of 90 in the first 5 days. Over the weekend, ADP of around 115. That is quite the fall. Corey Seager's dropped 14 picks to 115. Seiya Suzuki went from 94 to 124, a 30-pick drop. That's probably at least Sunday might have been about injuries there because the knee injury. Carlos Estevez has dropped 19 picks down to 129. Brandon Woodruff's dropped 16.5 picks to 129. Some of these are injuries induced, but I think Spencer Strider might be the biggest surprise to me, Ben, because at least he's been pitching unlike some of these other guys, but I think maybe people are wisening to the velocity's not there.
He's got to keep falling. He's still too high. Is this market correction on Strider? I have him way down my board, so it's kind of unfortunate to see him dropping. Hopefully he starts going back up to 90 so people keep taking him that early. And, I'm fine with most of these drops. The one that I've been in on, but of course it's an injury circumstances, Suzuki, which is kind of unfortunate. With Woodruff, it sounds like he may miss opening day and start the year on the IL. Didn't have great comments. And, yeah, Carlos Estevez, I feel like everyone's heard the issue with him, so that's not surprising either.
Yep. A few more here. Griffin Jacks is up 17 spots to 119. Edwin Uceta's throwing, and if progressing stays the same, he'll be back by beginning of May, Ben. So you have like a month of Griffin Jacks to hopefully take strangle of the job. Sandy Alcantara's up 16 picks. Dennis Santana's up 10. We'll stay there with those three pitchers. So you got two closers and a starter there. Any thoughts on Jacks, Sandy, and Dennis Santana, who I saw on Twitter, Rick Graham, great, great relief pitching follow from Pitcher List. He did mention that Dennis Santana hasn't pitched in a while because he hasn't been utilized out of the bullpen of the WBC. So that's just something to keep in mind also.
That's unfortunate.
Might be pitching in backfields, don't get me wrong, but he has not seen game action in a while. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad thing about the WBC is that they kind of play to win, and then you get guys who are so good, but they don't crack.
That's like why Matthew Boyd left. He's like, I have to get my innings. He's using me out of the bullpen. This isn't helping me right now.
Yeah, which is a smart move on his part. Yep. The Jacks price is just wild. I loved him as the same type of flyer like Robert Garcia, but he's going so much earlier than that now. Well, Jack's skills are so good. If he was closer to 150, I'd consider it, but now he's three rounds earlier. It's just wild. I can't do that. And then Sandy, I wrote him down as an option, but he's got pulled up before, and or maybe I think I took a Monaga over Sandy. I think I liked the whip better with Shota. And then Santana, it's just a kind of a product of all the closers getting pushed up earlier, so then like the second tier and third tier are kind of just following them. And 130 isn't horrible. Even if you want a soft punt closer and take him as your RP1 Santana, I think that's not a bad idea. Just hope he gets some work, though.
Yes, agreed. The Santana one, I don't mind him as my SP2 or RP2, I mean, or if you have to just punt the position, like, I think he's going to keep the job for a while. It's just an interesting predicament that we're sitting in. Three outfielders I want to throw out there real quick. Jack Kags is up 10 picks from 163 to 153. I think that steam's going to keep going throughout the week, Ben. Hate to break it to your future drafts. I don't think you're really a Kags guy anyways. But Christian Yelich, he's technically util only. He's up 13 and a half picks. I got him for 11 bucks my last OLAC. I am totally fine having him as util, and if he somehow gets 10 games in the outfield, like, it's gravy. But the biggest one that surprises me in this little pocket here, Kyle Stowers is up nearly 18 picks, Ben. About 155-ish, or 154 to like 137, somewhere in that range. He's moved up to, sorry, his ADP now is 137, like an 18-pick jump. Kyle Stowers, what did I miss besides health here?
I don't know, honestly.
That one shocks me to see.
Well, just so if we just look at the 3.8 to 3.13 ADP, I think him and Yelcher is going way too late to begin with. I have them ranked much higher than 150 for both of them. So that was kind of an inefficiency, I think, in the early drafts.
Like Yelich was getting the util, like, yeah, your util only. Let's like dig into the profile and let's get this together.
I think we should be past that by now because we got Schwarber going in the second round. We got Yordan going in the third round. He's rising. Yelich.
Otani Rooker. Goes first.
What was that?
Otani goes first.
Yeah, Otani goes. Yeah, how'd I forget Otani? Yeah, I kind of forget about him. Like,
yeah, he just does his thing up there.
Rooker was a util only last year, and look, that played out fine. So yeah, it's just a correction, I think. And you're kind of right about Caglione, but it'd be nice to have him just to see if he does turn into a little bit of what Kurtz did. Yeah, it's tough, especially when the projections hate him. But at some point, you can't look at projections completely. So, I don't know. 150 isn't horrible.
No.
But I wonder how much of the upside we're eating into by taking him there.
Agreed. Like, I like Cags. I still like the price. I just know for a fact that there's just, like, so much volatility there. So if you're drafting, especially in a 15, which these main events are, you better have a game plan with Cags, because if he's great, awesome, gravy, groovy, you roll with it. But if not, it gets murky quick. This one makes me so happy. And I'll make the tongue-in-cheek jokes when they say, you know, people that draft in the main event are the smartest, which is not always true. But I'm going to throw this one out here right now because Connor Griffin down 25 picks. He had an ADP of 127-ish over the first five drafts. Over the weekend, Connor Griffin's going on 152. I know there was a story that came out later last week that said he probably won't start with the team. Believe what you wish on that one. But Connor Griffin falling 25 picks is pretty cool. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
No, it's just funny to see everyone slam on the brakes the way they did.
Because I saw he was on pace for being a top 100 pick, it felt like.
Yeah, people were saying that. And now he's probably not going to get there unless something drastic changes with the Pirates' plans. So he's probably looking more like a stash now, but a very high upside stash. But 152 is a lot to – in a main event, it's a lot – to ask with a stash, or it's a big price to pay for a stash, I think.
And just a few more here. Ranger Suarez is down to almost 13 spots. Stephen Kwan is up 11, which surprised me. Taylor Ward's also up 10. So a lot of outfielders we've talked about, actually. A lot of outfielders are moving up, which is a bit surprising. Tatsuya Imai is up 13 spots. Did not see him rising. I know he had a really good spring start, but still worried about the six-man rotation, Ben. Blake Snell's falling as he should. Ozzie Albies falling 16 spots. Dylan Cruz falling 12. Anything else you'd like to mention in these? I'm just kind of sticking to the top 200 here before it gets really volatile, because after that, oh, my God, it's get your guy season at that point.
Sal Stewart's rising. Rodon is they're rising. They're both in the top 200 now.
Yep.
Willier Abreu is the big one.
What a fall. My God.
Who was the fall?
Robert Suarez falling almost over 52 picks.
Well, he was always going way too high. Yeah, never made sense.
Finally got that.
Yeah.
There's the Kirby Yates got a big jump. Where's your Willier Abreu on control?
He's pick 189 now. You're looking way too low.
He got a 20 pick jump. That's a big one. Yep.
Yeah. He's that's a lot for. Well, I guess he's not going to platoon anymore. That's kind of the appeal. But
I thought he'd be going higher. I think he'll keep moving up this week.
But even I'm not gonna it's late, so I'm not gonna pull him up, but his underlying stats aren't that good, Abreu's. Like,
No.
he's good, but they're not like that good. So I don't people just love him. And then the other one, who else? Oh, no, Noelvi Marte is falling like a cement block.
Yep. He's
Two
33
rounds.
picks below. That's a big one. Seeing Gabby Moreno fall almost 50 picks is kind of what I, sorry, not sorry on that one.
I had him ranked around that range before, like when I first made my rankings, and then I'm like, well, everyone's so I might as well move him up like everybody else has him or ADP. But yeah, I've never been a Moreno fan.
Then I'll just highlight a couple of the biggest late risers. Matthew Liberatore is up 54 spots at 307. Grant Holmes is up 40 spots to 317. Christian Javier. So a lot of late pitcher darts. You're seeing health, maybe job security right now with some of those guys. I'm sure as heck going to use this list for my OLAC reserve round. I mean, my auction reserve round.
Yes.
But
Yep.
anybody else you'd like to mention there? We actually have a handful of listener questions tonight.
I'm actually looking at a lot of the risers and like the big ones going late, and I have a few of them on my team. Lats is there, Sproat, Carson Kelly, so not alone.
No, you are not alone, and really curious to see where that keeps moving as this next week goes. Especially Vegas's mayhem will take place on Saturday. All right, some listener questions. First off, from the chat here, Birch McCollum says, "Let me rephrase this." He had a previous question. What's the latest that anyone should take their SP1, Ben?
Well, I actually was looking when he asked his original question, which was what was the latest someone took their SP1? Who was it? It was me with Joe Ryan. I was looking at the board. I was the last guy to take their SP1. I don't know if you should do that, but I think by the fifth round, though, I think there's a reason why I made sure I got Joe Ryan, especially in the 15th. In a OC or something like that's a 12 teamer. I think Bubba's waited longer than that before, and it's ended up
I
looking pretty
got,
good.
yeah, wait till round 9 last year.
Yeah, that OC ended up, you had a good staff, like, because I think you had
I had a
Peralta in
good
that.
team. I
Yeah.
finished third in that league. Used to only get paid in the top two, unfortunately.
Oh, that's annoying.
That's
But
why
yeah.
I really get annoyed with OCs now.
Got to do those standalones, all those
100%.
standalones. Yeah, so I would say fifth round. Probably.
I'm even in that boat for 15s. Like the longest I wait is it's usually between rounds 3 and 5, depends on what where I'm flow where the flow is essentially. And like if you even look at like the auction builds I have, most of them are within that fourth and fifth round, it feels like, is where my pitchers kind of hang.
I
So
wouldn't plan for that, but I think if something happens, I at least try to get one by the fifth.
yes, it's just kind of like we were talking about with Ben with the roadmap. It's kind of like, okay, I had all these guys and now I'm seeing all these guys disappear. I need to take one now, essentially. So like have your cutoff point of what pitcher is your cutoff, plan accordingly from there. That'd be my 2 cents. Don't think of what round you want, think of what pitcher you want. Have that as your cliff. GP Churchill says, big difference between NFBC 12s and NFBC 15 drafts. What is the most important draft strategy adjustment you make going into your 15s? You pretty much only
Well, I
play
stay in
15s,
my
Ben.
15s, but
Yeah,
it'd
I
be
say you
pitching.
play 15s.
Yeah, it'd be adjusting for pitching. So if you went from like OCs, like we just mentioned with Bubba waiting for that OC last year, I would just you have to go for pitching early because there's more. The pitching pool doesn't increase. It's just that there's more teams fighting for it. So it rises up pretty steadily throughout the entire portion of the draft. So just be more like we mentioned. I was after 11 rounds, I had six pitchers and five hitters, which you would never see that in an OC, I don't think.
Yeah, it is 100% the pitching situation for me because hitters, you can kind of mix and match. I'd also say just be cognizant of the outfield because you don't want
Yeah.
too many platoon guys. And if you wait too long in a 15, just because like you think, because you can wait a long time in 12s to get at least four starting outfielders and then a platoon, like you can just drop it. If you wait too long in a 15, you'll be stuck with only like two or three starting outfielders. And that's going to bite you big time, just accumulating stats in general at that point.
And
So
the boring hitters become more valuable too.
that's why I made the Ian Happ joke. Like in 12s, I probably would never draft Ian Happ unless I was really bored. In a 15, like I looked to target Ian Happ. So
Yeah.
it's like it's a thing. All right, from the old Discord here, Martin Sokolsky says, it looks like we're 12 drafts in so far. Whose ADP is the most surprising? I guess we'll start there. Whose ADP is the most surprising in main events, Ben?
Most surprising. Let me pull this back up. Oh man, I wish I saw that ahead of time.
All good. It's all good.
Honestly,
Why?
I say Neto. I think Zach Neto.
Yes,
because even before the injury, I don't think he deserved to drop as much as he was dropping. So I don't really, especially when he has power and speed and at shortstop, which, yeah, it's a strong position, but we always talk about the cliff when you get to Swanson, and I think Neto, I think he's fine. So I'll go with Neto.
Yep, I think that's a very good call. I was shocked to see that kind of drop off right there. Next up, the most surprising, what non-injured player will see the biggest move by opening day in the main?
We didn't say either direction, so I don't want to go with a rookie because that's kind of a cheap one. People like Strider a lot, so I don't think he's going to move that much.
I think
honestly, who are you thinking?
Kevin McConnell's getting all kinds of buzz, man. If he makes that team, he's going to fly up the board.
But now he's going the other direction, though. So I was thinking Wheeler maybe because he was just going in the third round last year, and now he's pretty close. It feels like he's already jumped around.
Wheeler is another. Yeah, if he throws like another bullpen, or he gets like a simulated backfield game or something, or God forbid he pitches in a game, like, because there's a rumor he might pitch in the spring game. Like, Wheeler could be a real big one, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the people who have made the biggest leaps, and then where that momentum might just keep going. Honestly, I think Wheeler is probably a good bet for up, and then Noelvi Marte probably seems like a good bet to just keep falling. I don't know though.
Yeah, Noelvi will keep falling as well, but I'd keep watching. It's all about playing time right about now. That's where the big standouts are for me.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas Beery says, who have each of you guys had a change of heart on at the last moment and are now willing to draft? So who's a player that you really have not had any interest in? They're like, you know what? I could draft this guy.
Well, in this draft, it was Shota Imanaga.
That's true.
Yeah, I was out after how he ended last year, and then him gaining – or him – I forget how much he gained in velocity in his first outing, but that – gave me a lot of comfort, at least taking him at his new price, which is my SP4, arguably SP5, depending on how McKenzie Gore does. So he's one for sure for me.
For me, a guy that I've had a change of heart on, and I think it's also because of the landscape of relief pitching, I have actually started grabbing a couple shares of Ryan Walker. Do not love it at all, but that's just the world we live in right now. And so I have made Ryan Walker like an RP2 for me in a couple leagues. I was completely out, and I've at least come into that world.
Yeah, he's a good one too. And then also I'll say Emmett Sheehan because I'd never even looked at him in DCs, but now I just took him as my SP2. So,
all right, Ryan Bloomfield, he has a question for us. In general, what's your reserve round strategy as these drafts get closer to opening day? Like, are you looking at schedule, your hitter pitcher split, upside versus depth, etc.? So like, you're in my brain, you're much better at planning ahead for these things. So when you're entering the reserve rounds, what are you looking for?
Pitching, starting pitching.
That was evidence. Seven starters in your last 15 picks.
Yeah. And then I'll get if it's not my util, I'll get my sixth outfielder. And so I didn't back up every position. I have, like I mentioned, the only one that's not backed up is first base. So if you don't have a util only in your util, you can get an outfielder or a corner or middle there. So that's knocking off one of those backups. And then I have a backup third baseman on my bench. Actually two, I guess, one's Young's in my lineup. So it's like two hitters max. I try to go 2-5. I'll maybe go with a third reliever if I really get shut out in my RP2. But I felt good enough with Garcia where I'd rather take a chance on a starter. So I know some people say that they actually lean the opposite, where they'll try to go more hitting just to be different, because a lot of people do in the NFBC do like to go hitter heavy with their benches. But I guess now, too, people are taking players like Mick Abel. I've seen Robbie Snelling, Ian Seymour, guys who I really like in DCs, but maybe there's something that happens between now and opening day where they make the lineups, but the rotations, but I don't think they're going to start in the majors. So where we're like a week plus out, okay, maybe take a stab on those guys. If not, you fab someone, but coming down to like my third main event, I'm gonna really make sure that everybody I draft's on a major league roster for sure.
Yes, if you look at like my OC I did at the beginning of February, a lot of the reserve picks there are pretty much respects. Most of them probably hitting the waiver wire pretty soon. Where even my OLAC I did a week ago, like maybe one or two were a spec. Like it'll be zero. Like to your point, I always try to make sure, you know, if I have a first base at corner, I have a third base on the bench, the same opposites middle infield, one outfielder, and then I usually get four pitchers. That's kind of how I build out. Unless there's like just a glaring value that sits there in the reserve rounds. And usually it's four relievers, especially in 15s. It's hard to find spec closers. And like most people take these guys earlier in this market. Maybe there'll be someone, but I try to get those starting pitchers, the accumulators, like the Leahys, like we talked about. I like a lot. There's a handful of pitchers like that that could get a role and become big. Like, I've taken a lot of Snelling. It'd be a shame if he's not on the roster, but that would be the total Marlins thing to do. So, I won't be doing that maybe this weekend, but it would be a guy I would have targeted in the past. All right. And I don't mind the roster thing. Like if you look at, you know, the Rockies on the road to start the season, stuff like that, that's not like, I think the Marlins play them the first weekend or something. Like those are options as well. Hit it like the old Michael Wacha a couple of years back. It's a two step out the gate and you can drop them and it works out quite well.
Yeah, I
Richard.
may look
Oh,
at
sorry.
I may look at the schedule, but I really want, especially in the main event, I kind of just want to get like the best guys for the season if I can.
Because in a 15, it's harder to, there's not as much streaming options. In a 12, like you can plan your first week and then drop four guys if
Exactly.
you want. Like it's, and I've done that. Like you can totally do that. Just keep maximizing stats and play that game. There's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, in a 15, it's like, is that one extra start worth it compared to a guy you might actually use most of the season? That's the question. Richard Sand says, what do you do to prepare for the main event draft? Is there anything different to your process than previous drafts this draft season? That's for you, Ben, because I don't do the main event.
Could have almost. You just showed, you went to the auction instead.
Oh, there's a great chance I'll do both next year because I'm a degenerate. And I just, the more I hang around things, like I don't do drugs. So this is my drug and I'll hang around it eventually. Like the auction's my gateway, I think. So we'll see.
You're talking like a true NFBC-er, Bubba. The big difference is I map out my main events. I don't map out my DCs. I kind of just go with the flow and mess with builds.
Yep. That's, I mapped out my. I mapped out my auctions this year for the first time. So yes, that is the thing I'm starting to do. SMMS79 says, okay, this is for you, Ben, when you're in New Jersey. Who did you meet in person for the first time that didn't look anything like you expected?
Oh man. All right, so we're pretty good friends now, so I don't know if I should say this or not. The guilds was shorter than I was expecting. I'll say that.
There's always a handful of people like that.
Yeah.
It's just great because like we just know voices. Maybe they've been on podcasts sitting in chairs or just personalities on Twitter. So we don't know anybody, to be honest.
Honestly,
But
it's probably like height. Like I saw Steve Weimer, he's huge.
yeah, Weimer's
He's
tall and skinny.
like a Slender Man or Candy Man, whatever the really
Let's
tall
wait till you
person
meet Spore. Spore is like 7 feet tall and the size of a bean pole. It's height 100% is. Because we just don't know, and it's not a big deal, of course. But it's just like I remember I met David Mendelsohn from like first time in FPAS a couple years back. Did not expect like just because of his personality, and everything. No, didn't expect that at all. He's a short guy as well, but he could probably bench press me at the same time. So no offense to that at all. But yes, the height is the one that that gets you for sure.
Which isn't a bad thing. It's just like you just don't know what you don't know. Like you see from everyone's like chest up all the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm
That's all you
saying. It's
see.
not a slight at all.
Nah, yeah.
I know what you're saying. I've been in your shoes. I know what you're saying because between FPAS and the first time when I went to Vegas last year, there was a lot of like, whoa, this dude, whoa, this, like I had no clue and people had to point out and yeah, so I get you there.
The coolest thing though is like when you finally go to a live event and then you, because like all I would only ever see if someone podcasts and I watch, I would see their face. But you see all these names all the time and DCs or main events. And then like I met Ned Donahue for the first time this year, who I always end up in leagues with, and he was a really nice guy.
Yep.
He knew who I was, which was really cool. Like he was in the ultimate. He goes, "Hey, nice to meet you, Ben." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, we drafted before." So it's those things are really cool too, where you actually finally see someone for the first time.
Yes. That's a great point. That's the biggest thing I know I liked about Vegas and Orion liked as well when we talked about it is so many people that either in our Discord listen to our shows or whatever, like like, and then just meeting the general, like, you know, the legends, like, I've never seen who John Posma is. He walked up and we talked, and then like Hinkleman, and just even just so many different guys, like Matt Leahy, who was in the CLQ, like, we've interacted in Discord, but like, there's just like a bunch of people, like Zito, hanging out with Zito from our Discord, like all these people that you know, but you don't, like hanging out with Mark Winoker. Like, it was so cool. Kind of, he's been on my show like four times, never met the guy type things. And yeah, it's a different bird. It's the live draft thing is pretty sweet. SMS has another question though. In all seriousness, any guys in the first 10 rounds you find yourself significantly cooler on than you did when you would have expected when you first started prepping? So first 10 rounds, any guys you're surprised how cool you're on them, I guess.
That's a good question.
Like, I'm always out on LED of the cruise, so that's easy. it's always a bummer when someone falls that you're into, like Yamamoto, like send him the other way. That's okay. Push him up the board, folks. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anyone yet. Who am I kind of? So this is interesting. I haven't I don't have Ben Rice anywhere yet. How wild
isn't
is that?
It so much fun when there's a guy you love, but the price just becomes a point where you're like, no, no, this doesn't work.
And now he's I could have taken him instead of Rooker, but I like Rooker's overall stats better for the main event contest.
That's so
funny. Yeah, it's tough. I guess it's Ben Rice, honestly, because he's been my catcher too the entire offseason or draft season. But then again, I haven't gone early catcher that early, at least. So maybe it's just part of my draft strategy, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair, because it is. There's always a handful of guys I'll be on to start the season, then they move up so high. I'm like, yeah, we're done. We're done playing this game, and then I like no shares, and things are all said and done. And that's always a massive bummer.
Another Yankee too, actually, is Cody Bellinger. I had him ranked pretty highly all DC season, and I haven't taken him yet, and now he's dropping. I still haven't taken him.
Yep, no, he's a guy I've actually warmed up to. That's a great point. Like, I was never in on Cody, and I actually have targeted him. Don't have any shares, but I'm actually targeting Cody Bellinger at times. So that is an improvement for me. Last question we have here is from Mailman Mike. Were there any team builds that surprised you, Ben?
Oh, Mailman Mike, if you've been following the Discord, there's been every main event has been chaos.
Yeah, there's always one or two teams you're just like, what the heck are they doing?
Honestly, though, in my main, it actually looks relatively normal. There were no really extreme builds that I can see. But it was a very sharp room as well too. So I'm not surprised to see that everyone knew what they were doing. Without looking too deeply, but just like looking at the split of yellow squares, the pitchers versus the hitters, everyone looks relatively balanced to start. So I would say there's nothing crazy actually.
Beautiful.
Oh, I have one. Yeah. Team one, very good player. His SP2 is Sonny Gray. His SP3 is Aaron Nola. That's the only one. But if anyone can pull it off, I think he could perhaps.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player. I think he finished pretty high last year. So.
Yeah, he did.
I think he'll be fine. To your point,
and look who his SP1.
I'll see him. I'll see him in Vegas as well. So, yeah. His SP1. Your favorite. I'm not making fun of him. I'm laughing because of who it is.
Yeah. I had to point that out after saying all that.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you guys should draft more rooms together. You might not take anybody's player. Like, just draft next to each other. It'll be an easy draft for the two of you.
Yeah.
But all right. We'll wrap it up there, Ben. Any final thoughts? So the first drafts in the book. When are your final two? I think you said it's like Thursday, Monday or something.
Yeah. Thursday the 19th is my second main. And then my last one was going to be the 22nd, but now it's going to be the 23rd Monday night.
Perfect. So looking forward to hearing how that goes and see how this ADP keeps changing. And final like week and a half of drafts. Next Thursday, we have Major League Baseball to talk about here. So we'll keep you up to date weekly like we do here. We'll be recapping Fab before you know it, as there's a Fab run this Sunday for anybody curious, if you forgot about that. But we'll keep you up to date here. Make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I am at BDentric, and this was Benched with Bubba, episode 841. Catch y'all next time.